Turn to Ecclesiastes 5:14. Now, I'm going to try to finish Ecclesiastes next session. I may not make it, but I'm going to try to finish it. As you remember, written by Solomon, supposedly the most wise man in the world, but how many wives did he have?
Too many.
Was it 300 wives and 700 concubines or vice versa? I know there was 1,000 there, and I don't understand that being a wise thing to do. Not. All right. 5:14. Everybody found it? Money is put into risky investments that turn sour, and everything is lost. In the end, there is nothing left to pass on to one's children. Anybody know what that is? Dow Jones back to June of 2007. Dow was approaching 14. It was well over 13. And I think it closed this afternoon at 10.1 or something, getting down as low as 7,000. And it goes up and down. Is that a risky investment? Oh, boy. Read Proverbs 4. Somebody, Proverbs 6 and 8. Anybody read Proverbs 6, 7, and 8. We want and we want and we want. We strive and we strive and we strive. We do without to accumulate. And what happens to it? What is that saying? That one generation makes it, the next generation protects it, and the third generation squanders it. And it's all gone. Heard about a man who had accumulated many millions, and on his deathbed, he called our friend John Carpenter to his bedside, and he was crying. I forgot to teach my children how to take care of all I spent my life, and they'll be gone in 6 weeks. I don't know how long it took, but what a sad thing to know you're dying, you spent your life accumulating money, and it'll all be gone in 6 weeks after, or to think it'll all be gone in 6 weeks. We all come to the end of our lives as naked and empty-handed as on the day we were born. We can't take our riches with us. Why do we spend so much time attempting to get it and hold on to it and protect it and make it grow and buy the things we want but still want more? Why do we do that if we can't take it with us? Is there anyone who has ever thought he could take it with them? I don't think there is. And yet we squander our lives trying to accumulate stuff that will be squandered when we're dead. I happen to see that. Yes, dear. What? Oh, I thought you were going to say something really profound, and I was going to.
Looking at me, I'm like,
Yes, Bob.
You've got to remember, there's a lot of people that don't think there's anything after this
body. So everything is now?
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then why try to hold on to it and build such a massive fortune? Okay, think of it loud. The bumper sticker that says he who dies with the most toys wins.
No, still dead.
Yeah, he's still dead, but he wins. Oh, I don't. Well, remember, our money is tainted.
Yeah, we've forgotten what money is for.
Do we want it just to have it? Is it just plain ego? And then you get it, and it's not replaced anyway. Yes, sir. Well, Warren Buffett says that Bill knows more how to give it away. So Warren Buffett gives him bushels, billions of dollars, and then he disposes of his and also Warren Buffett's. And Warren Buffett is one of those guys, if you meet him on the street, you think there's a man that may have $1,000 in the bank, second richest man in the United States. And she had millions. Somebody else. These are the 10, and I can't tell, I think all of them are up there. Those are the 10 richest men, 10 richest people in the United States. There are 4 listed there in the 4th one, and then 2 down in the bottom. And this, too, is a very serious problem. People leave this world no better off than when they come. All their hard work is for nothing, like working for the wind. Throughout their lives, they live under a cloud, frustrated, discouraged, and angry. just like that poor soul. He is, huh? Yes. Bill Gates, 40, Warren Buffett. They kind of change places once in a while. Yeah, it used to be millions. And we used to have to be careful whether we were saying millions or billions. And now there's no real problem because we're in debt trillions. That's an easy word to understand. And you're going to have to pay my share. I hope you know that. Of the national debt. Okay? Conclusion, God alone gives contentment. Even so, I have noticed one thing at least that is good. It is good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during the short life God has given them and to accept their lot in life. Now, does that sound like another scripture that we heard, although we hear it in another? Look to Luke 12, 19 and 20. Luke 12, 19 and 20. You'll recognize this scripture as being somewhat like this one, but one is to the excess, and that makes the difference. Because what Solomon is saying, enjoy the things God gives you. Enjoy them. Luke 12, 19 and 20. Now, are they not? One is to enjoy it. One is to wallow in it. Now, I couldn't find the good barns, but picture that barn as the barn he had, and then he had great crops. And he built that barn in order to just take care of the goods. And he wasn't going to do anything with it other than make it his. I'm just going to have it. Now, there's a difference in enjoying it and a difference in wallowing in it. And when you build the barns just to take care of it and confine it and hold it, that is wallowing. And it is a good thing to receive wealth from God and the good health to enjoy it. To enjoy your work and accept your lot in life, this is indeed a gift from God. God keeps such people so busy enjoying life that they take no time in brooding over the past. How many of you remember this painting? Who is it? Norman Rockwell, one of my favorites, if not my favorite painter of all time. And that is the enjoyment to which he is talking about, just the family. Okay, go to Ecclesiastes 6, and we're going to go through 6, 1 through 7. Quickly, attain everything, and it is for naught. When Warren Buffett dies, he may be buried in a larger and more ornate casket than me, but he'll be covered by the same old dirt and the same old worms will get him that will get me. Why does God give so much to some and not to others? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, I have. And God knows what he's doing.
God knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
What happens to them if they do get it? Gone in no time. Gone in no time. There is another serious tragedy I've seen under the sun, and it weighs heavily on humanity. God gives some people great wealth and honor and everything they could ever want, but then he doesn't give them the chance to enjoy these things. They die, and someone else, even a stranger, ends up enjoying their wealth. This is meaningless, a sickening tragedy. How many of you remember Howard Hughes? At the time he was alive, he was considered by many to be the richest man in the world. I heard him on a phone interview one time, and they were talking about his billions, and they said, Mr. Hughes, are you happy? Mm-hmm. Not really. His favorite ice cream was a particular pistachio, and the people who worked for him went to the store one day to get his pistachio. They didn't have it, and they came back and told him, they don't carry it anymore. We'll find out what happened to it. Well, that company had gone out of business. So he went to the company to buy the recipe for his pistachio ice cream. And they wouldn't sell him that recipe. Howard Hughes bought the entire company so he could have one single pistachio ice cream recipe. Now, that's having money and enjoying it at least to some extent. But I was saddened 2-3 weeks ago. You remember when June Ho was speaking, he said that upon the death of Chuck Smith, Calvary Chapel will begin to decline. You remember him saying that? You agree? It all depends on who's in charge, doesn't it? It all depends. It all depends who's in charge, whether they're following God or following somebody else. But it saddened me when he said that. To think that we expend all the time, energy, we're working toward having our own building, and when we're gone, maybe our great-great-grandchildren will be accepting things in church that we never thought possible. But that is the way of man. A man might have 100 children and live to be very old, but if he finds no satisfaction in life and doesn't even get a decent burial, it would have been better for him to be born dead. Solomon in this part really sounds pessimistic. His birth would have been meaningless and he would have ended in darkness. He wouldn't even have had a name and he would have never seen the sun or known of its existence. Yet he would have had more peace than in growing up to be an unhappy man. He might live 1,000 years twice but still not find contentment. Now, skip down to Ecclesiastes 6, 10, 11, and 12. Even enjoy what you have again. Everything has already been decided. It was known long ago what each person would be, so there's no use arguing with God about your destiny. Now, boy, that brings up a thorny issue, doesn't it? I contend this is not predestination. It is known. It is not decided, but it is known. If I ask you whether you want a piece of bread or a piece of pie, I pretty well know which one you're going to choose. God knows what we're going to choose, and that's the reason it's known, not because he decided. Otherwise, man wouldn't need any free will. The more words you speak, the less they mean. So what good are they? In the few days of our meaningless lives, who knows how our days can best be spent? Our lives are like a shadow. Who can tell what will happen on this earth after we are gone? Do you want to know the direction it's going right now? Do you really want to know? Would you like right now to be able to look into the future 20 years and see where America stands? How many of you would like to know? Nobody? I wouldn't. I would not like. And it scares me to think where we've come. Do you remember 30 years ago who became president of the United States? Come on now, you're... No, 30 years ago. Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980, and he was a positive man. He thought the shining city on the hill and gave us reason for hope. We were in a bad way psychologically. And then years later, that drip, drip, drip of how terrible America is. And we're seeing that culminating now. Who are we afraid of? People we would never have been afraid of before. We've got to be afraid of Iran. We have to be. And 30 years ago, they were a fly on the wall. We have sunk so low. God has let our small enemies become our masters. And it's our fault. It's not their fault. It's our fault. We let it happen. We walked into that satanic trap. Look at 7:1. The value of a good reputation. By the way, do people care now what their reputation is? I fear that they don't. I see a Bill Clinton walking around with that big smile on his face. What he did to the teenagers of this era cannot be calculated. He told them that oral sex is not sex. It's not just go ahead. It's perfectly okay. And we're going down the trails to our infinite destiny of nothingness because we paid attention and we listened. Saw that also from the CDC. 71% of teenage girls now believe it's perfectly acceptable to have a baby out of wedlock. 71%! Yeah, they went away to visit an aunt for a while. Oh, it's nothing wrong with it. Yeah. A good reputation is more valuable than costly perfume, and that the day you die is better than the day you are born. Proverbs 22:1. Yep. Yeah, I certainly hope nobody thought that I was saying otherwise. We lost the fight, or we changed the conversation when we quit saying God said. If we just say God said, and if they want to say, well, I don't agree with God, that's on them. There are plenty of those. But when we started saying, well, I just don't think you ought to have an abortion, God said, 1 Corinthians 7, do I remember correctly? Let every man have his own wife. There's one that said so that he will not burn. So get married. Now, that's pretty strong medicine, getting married rather than having sex outside of marriage. But what he said was, get married so you won't do that. But we don't want to believe that part either. Thank you for energy. I hope nobody thought I was saying that we should go ahead and have an abortion. Okay. Thank you for bringing it up. A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, loving favor rather than silver and gold. Look at the progression. I've only picked out a few. In nearly every survey, this man or George Washington is chosen as the greatest president in American history. One or the other. It all depends on who the experts are. Now, I don't want you to throw up, but have we declined? Have we declined? And believe it or not, it's only been 150 years, 160 actually. Lincoln was elected in 1860, do I remember correctly?
I wasn't there for you then.
I was there. In fact, I voted at the convention. Better to spend your time at funerals than at parties. After all, everyone dies. So the living should take this to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for sadness has a refining influence on us. When are we more tuned into God?
I don't mean to interrupt.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. That was the last slide. I didn't know it would bother you quite that much, Ron. I really didn't. I'm sorry. I'll just turn it off, and that way it'll get good and cool. Okay, now where did I get to? A fool's laughter is quickly gone, like thorns crackling in a fire. Anybody ever heard hay burn? It goes in, it goes, and it's gone. Well, that's a fool's laughter, because the fool is the one that does not learn what God is trying to teach him. He quickly has a good time, and then it's all over. And then he goes to meet the Lord, who says, you know, you shouldn't have spent your money on that barn, because that was the last thing you're going to enjoy. All right, just skip down to 7, 11 through 12. Wisdom as an inheritance. How many of you wish you could have one more conversation with your mother or your dad? Remember when you thought they were just out of their cotton-picking minds? And you thought, you know, I'll be glad when I can make my own decision so there won't be so many mistakes made at my expense. Yeah, if everybody understood, and my mama and my daddy, oh my goodness, I just couldn't believe. If we had another conversation, what would you want to talk about? Would you want to talk about money? No. What would you want to talk about?
Salvation.
Thanking them for bringing you up in a Christian home, or that maybe they did not accept. That must be sad. That must be sad. I'm glad that both of mine will be waiting for me. Wisdom is even better when you have money. Now he compares the two. Both are a benefit as you go through life. Wisdom and money can get you almost anything, but only wisdom can save your life. Accept the way God does things, for who can straighten what He has made crooked? Now, if I had my way to talk to my mom and dad again, I'm not sure what it would be. But I think I would want to talk about why didn't you beat my behind more often? Because, and now kids, you know, if you thump them on the behind one time, I'm going to call the police. Worked with a woman at Walmart who said, okay, you go right ahead, but you remember, I've got 20 minutes before they get here. Sure. By the way, this is the New Living Translation. Okay. Which translation is that? American Standard. Okay. Well, CEV is probably the most straightforward and clear with the fewest words. I like the New Living Translation, New King James, and the American Standard. I also have that convinces me to start reading it a little bit more because that is better than the New Living. Okay, thank you. A contemporary English version, and it uses everyday words, may leave out some of the flavor. Renee's found two or three places that she doesn't think it did an adequate job of translating, but I have found it really very good. It just does not have the flavor that the others do. Like, his had far more flavor than what I read from the NLT. Okay, 14. Enjoy prosperity while you can, but when hard times strike, realize that both come from God. Remember that nothing is certain in this life. Why does God give us hard times? He gives us good times. We love those. Yeah, I've always grown more when I was uncomfortable. But when I'm... I've been in a lot of valleys, and I've been on a lot of mountaintops. I like the mountaintops, but I didn't learn much at the mountaintop. I just knew where that was, and when I was in the valley, I was willing to do almost anything and learn anything in order to get out of the valley and get back at least halfway up the hill. Oh yeah, yeah. We don't see ourselves as quite as important when we're down low and got our knees cut out from under us. When we get down to our knees, we're willing to learn something and say, you know, there are some people that know a little bit more than I do. Do you want what you deserve at the end of this life? I think I told you this before, but it's a great story. A man was guarding the tracks at a railroad terminal. Did you remember? And it was his job to get out and flag down cars that were coming. It was 2:00 in the morning. And a carload of teenagers came up, and he didn't see them in time. He had gone to sleep. And the teenagers got partially on the track, and they were hit by a train, and all four were killed. And they put the man in jail for negligent homicide. His lawyer came to see him, talked to him, and when he started to leave, said, "Don't you worry, I'm going to get you justice." "No, I don't want justice. I want mercy." We don't want justice. When I meet God, I hope He forgets all about, but He doesn't forget those things. I would wish He would forget a lot of my life, and I want to see all of the mercy that He can possibly pull up for me. Not the justice, but the mercy. He's done it, but have I lived up to it? I've rejected it. And so, now, pay attention as you go along, as my grandfather used to say. Mine are not mistakes. I don't make many mistakes. I just bow my head and say, I'm going to do it anyway. And that's the very worst kind. You know what sin is. You know how bad it is. But you bow your neck. Now, maybe none of you have ever done that. None of you have never done. Okay, I'm the only one that has ever.
No, I'm right with you.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
But that's where the mercy comes in. I agree.
Well, He's already made it possible. Well, that gets into another theological question. And I ask for it every morning. I have seen everything in this meaningless life, including the death of good young people and the long life of wicked people. Have you seen that? Young people who die for no reason of their own. I see some of these stories on television of little sweet children getting cancer. And every time I see an ad for the hospital in Memphis, St. Jude's, it tears your heart out. These are little innocent children, and they're dying of cancer. And then you see some of these wicked, low-life people walking around causing everybody else harm, and they don't care. All they care about is themselves. So don't be too good or too wise. Why destroy yourself? On the other hand, don't be too wicked either. Don't be a fool. Why die before your time? Pay attention to these instructions, for anyone who fears God will avoid both extremes. I'm going to skip down to verse 25, I think. I searched everywhere, determined to find wisdom and to understand the reason for things. I was determined to prove to myself that wickedness is stupid and the foolishness is madness. I discovered that a seductive woman is a trap more bitter than death. Her passion is a snare, and her soft hands are chains. Those who are pleasing to God will escape her, but sinners will be caught in her snare. This is my conclusion, says the teacher. I discovered this after looking at the matter from every possible angle. Though I have searched repeatedly, I have not found what I was looking for. Only one out of 1,000 men is virtuous, but not one woman. Now, Gary, I say, Gary, as soon as I read that, I thought, I'm going to have Gary explain that to
me. All right, Gary.
Gary is showing wisdom. He knows when to keep his mouth shut. And I'm not going to jump into that one. But I will ask, why do you think he had that attitude? Now, I'm not answering any questions. I'm just asking questions. I have no answers. And if I had the answer, I would be too big a coward and too smart. He became corrupt. Is this at the point of his... But I did find this. God created people to be virtuous, but they have each turned to follow their own downward path. Now, I think I told you when we first started this study that I wanted us to remember, and let me read just the last two verses of the entire book. This is the 12th chapter, verses 13 and 14. Everything you were taught can be put into a few words. Respect and obey God. This is what life is all about. God will judge everything we do, even what is done in secret. Everything good or bad. If you sit down and read the entirety of Ecclesiastes, it turns out to be a really wonderful book. But if you do just little bits and pieces, and that's the reason I said remember those in the beginning, because if you do little bits and pieces, it looks like he really has no respect or love for anything or anybody, because he sounds like he's saying God makes mistakes here and there for letting the little children die and the evil ones. But while we're here, while we're on this earth, live for God and respect His opinions. Okay, anything from anybody before we have our prayer time and I get to sit there? You think he is, Solomon?
Yeah, he should be pointing at himself.
Yeah, because I don't think I have those feelings. I have very few of them. A few of them I do. The part about the foolish people, that's me. The part, though, where we don't have respect for others, I really don't think we have that. And maybe he just didn't run around with the best kind of people. I asked Junho one time if Israel fell most times because of outside influences, you know, the countries that would come in, and he said every time. Now, I'm not enough of a scholar to know, but I accept his word that every time America is falling because we're accepting other directions. We're going in a different way. We've decided that I asked my nephew one time how he felt about homosexuality. He said, I don't know how I feel about that yet. I said, God's already told you. He decided that he was smarter than God was wise. And when we're when we turn to our own devices, we get into trouble because we have egos. There's not a one of us. Sometimes it's stomped on and trampled and it's in the mud, but we still have an ego. And we get it up and brush it off and wash it a little bit, and we feel like we're back on top. But our egos get us into trouble. When we start thinking that I understand it as well as God, we're in deep trouble. But sometimes we start thinking we know better than God.
Ego is edging God out.
That's right. It is. And
That's good.
Did you make that up just now?
Oh,
okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mark. I didn't. I thought about. Oh, I still have it. I still have my soapbox. I have it here just in case. And I felt like, but I decided if I put it down and I really got started, that we wouldn't have time for prayer time.